This is Oklahoma Perspective. As the fight against COVID-19 continues, every town in Oklahoma is affected. Dr. Don Simmons practices medicine in Bartlesville, and he took some time to talk with KRMG's Russell Mills about the effects of social distancing on our neighbor to the north.
What are we seeing right now, at least in the Bartlesville area? I know you haven't really spent a lot of time in Tulsa during all this, but tell me what's going on up there and what it's been like on the ground, you know, where the healthcare intersection intersects with the general populace.
So very fortunately, we haven't had any positives up here in Bartlesville or Washington County that we've been notified of quite yet. I'm aware of a couple of persons of under surveillance or person of interest that we are currently monitoring. A couple of them have been tested at the hospital over the weekend. But as of right now, there's seemingly two big groups of people. One is those that are in near panic mode and are ready to hunker down and self-quarantine. And then there's those that don't really seem to have much of a concern over it and are carrying on with their life as if nothing was any different. I am kind of moving more in the direction of the first group rather than the second. I'm trying not to be panicked. And I really don't think there's much of a necessity for the level of panic that unfortunately we've been seeing. But my level of concern has certainly been increasing over the last several days as we are seeing this expand and spread. So we are certainly keeping our ears to the rail to try and figure out what the next step is.
And at this point, and somebody told me yesterday that of pandemics known to human history, this is the first one involving this type of virus. In other words, we've had flu pandemics. We had the bubonic plague. I think that was a virus. I'm not sure. I'd have to read up on that. But for a coronavirus to go pandemic, this is kind of a first. So we are really in uncharted territory medically. Is that accurate?
So when you look back into the historical pandemics of the past, probably the first one that we really think of is, of course, the Black Death or the bubonic plague, which I will correct you was actually a bacteria.
Uh-huh.
That even in the 21st century, we do from time to time see bacterial infections that are caused by that bacteria. But we actually have fairly decent antibiotics that can be used to treat that. If you go back in history, some of the other pandemics that we've spoken of, really the only other true pandemic was the Spanish flu in 1918. We've had some locally endemic situations. The Ebola virus could probably be considered that. It never really spread broad enough to be, by definition, what we would consider a pandemic. And one that really doesn't seem to be being spoken of very much recently is smallpox. And how the people that were coming from Europe to the islands in the Caribbean to Central America and to the Native Americans here in North America, it would have seemed to them that smallpox was a pandemic.
Good point. And
basically, where you run into problems and issues is when we have a microbe, be it a bacteria or a virus, that we have very little innate immunity to. We don't really consider the flu these days to be much of a pandemic because most everybody has seen the flu. They've either been infected to the flu or they have received flu vaccinations. So we have some indwelling immunity to the flu. The coronavirus or the novel coronavirus this year is a big deal because it's a new variety of viruses within the family of the coronavirus. And the problem is that we don't have any immunity to it. So it's typically felt that the coronaviruses are viruses that cause colds, much the same as the adenoviruses. But this particular one is one that we don't have an immunity to. So it comes in and it's basically like getting the worst cold of your life because you don't have the ability to push it away or to fight it off.
So for a doctor who might be treating one of these patients, and you mentioned you haven't had one yet, thankfully, but they're telling us it's just a matter of time. So my understanding is medically, there's nothing they can directly do that will affect this virus yet. They're working on a vaccine. I'm hearing that they've even tested one possibly in Washington State as early as today. But that's, you know, vaccine's great, but if you've already got the virus, and as you mentioned, there is no immunity in the human system yet to this particular virus because it's brand new. So what can be done? And if we run out of hospital beds and people are having to, you know, self-treat at home, how should they be preparing for that?
So basically, the first basic response to that is what we in the medical profession would call supportive care, which is basically treating the symptoms and keeping a watch on things to determine whether it is going to turn into something more. In general, when you know one of the calling cards of this particular virus is a fever. So, you know, a fever is actually our body's response to something that it doesn't like, and it's basically trying to alter the environment to make it less hospitable. So a fever is kind of a good thing, but a fever is also what helps us to feel so bad when we have one. Most of the current research on this particular virus, and this is all changing from day to day, but they're actually recommending against using an anti-inflammatory to try and treat fever, such as over-the-counter ibuprofen or Advil or naproxen Aleve, as being bad to use in this because it has the potential to decrease our body's immune response and inflammatory response to the virus itself. So basically that leaves you with acetaminophen or Tylenol, or as the rest of the world calls it, paracetamol, to treat the symptoms of the fever and the aches that go with it. One of the other calling cards of this virus is that it does seem to have a little bit more of an impact on our lower respiratory tract. So that's actually down the lungs themselves, and seems to have the ability to, much more so than other viruses and colds that we run across, actually cause an actual pneumonia of the viral type. And of course, that's going to manifest itself with a cough, sometimes productive, sometimes not, as shortness of breath. And in the most extreme cases, is actually going to lead to the potential to, hey, you need to go to the hospital and go get some different treatment for that than what you can do at home, up to and including putting you on a mechanical ventilator to give your body a chance to heal from the damage that has been done. So, you know, the triad that we speak of in terms of, hey, what are the things that I, as an emergency medicine physician, am looking for is a combination of fever and cough and shortness of breath all bundled up together into one. They, of course, are trying to see what sorts of things pharmaceuticals and outside treatments can be potentially beneficial. You know, when it comes to the flu, we have a couple of antiviral medications that seem to be beneficial to lessen the course. And I was actually just recently at lunchtime reading an article that they think they may have found a couple of not typical antiviral medications that we would think of on how we treat a cold or a viral pneumonia. But they may have tripped over a couple of different medications that do seem to have an impact at slowing down the coronavirus infections within an individual person and perhaps lessening their symptoms.
So all that said, this is not a super resistant MRSA type virus. It does respond to typical or basic antiviral procedures like using bleach solution to disinfect, spraying commercial products that are known to kill viruses. They do kill this virus. The problem is if you don't do that, the virus tends, I'm being told, to live on surfaces much longer than like a common flu virus. Is that kind of accord with the research you're seeing?
That pretty well coincides with the research that I'm seeing. Yes, it has the ability to survive on hard surfaces for a longer period of time than you would expect based upon your experience with other viruses. Seemingly, wood and metal products seem to have the longest life It does not seem to last very long on clothing, does not seem to last very long on skin. Don't let that fool you into feeling you don't need to be cautious and continue washing your hands. That's actually one of the things that is a universal language of infection prevention is continue washing your hands, whether it be with soap is obviously the best option that we have. But if soap is not easily available, then any sort of alcohol-based hand sanitizer with over a 60% or 70% alcohol content is felt to be good for temporary use. And again, we do still recommend washing your hands with soap is the best infection prevention mechanism that can be performed at this time.
All right. Doctor, I know you're super busy. Like I said, you have about 4 full-time jobs. So I just want to thank you for spending some time to talk with us. And, you know, I do think it's important to keep things factual. You know, if there's hard truths to face, we need to face them. But we also need to, as you mentioned, we can't set our hair on fire either. We have to take a methodical approach to this. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Bartlesville medical practitioner, Dr. Don Simmons. You're listening to Oklahoma Perspective. March is National Colorectal Awareness Month. After a certain age, regular examinations are highly recommended. Dr. Albert Mendoza is with MedExpress. He talks about colorectal cancer and how it can be prevented.
If I remember correctly, this is considered like one of the most preventable forms of cancer there is. Am I accurate?
Absolutely, sir. Like there are definitely, you know, many, many cases that of colorectal cancer that could easily be prevented. Getting your colonoscopy done to screen for colorectal cancer not only makes it preventable, but also if you do have it caught at an earlier stage, increases your 5-year survival tremendously.
Like dramatically, right?
Absolutely, sir. If it caught like at the local stage of colorectal cancer, it gives you a 5-year survival about 90%.
Wow, that's really good. So kind of explain what this is. We're talking about a cancer in what, the large intestine, small intestine, either, both? What exactly is it, colorectal cancer?
All right, great. Yeah, great question. So like just by the name, so you have the colon and the rectum. So the colon is the large intestine, and then the rectum is the rectum. It is a combination of 2 different type of cancers. The colon cancer is prevalent in both males and females, especially under the age of 55. But like rectal cancer is a little bit more prevalent in males. It is a very common cancer, and like I said earlier, very easily detectable if you just do your cancer screening by getting your colonoscopy.
When it comes to prevention, are there dietary things, or is there a way to prevent yourself from being, obviously there's other factors, you know, family history, genetics, all that given. Are there things that we can do, foods that we can eat or avoid that will help, you know, help us prevent colorectal cancer?
Absolutely. Diet definitely plays a big role in the development of colorectal cancer. So, you know, avoiding large consumption of red meat, like drinking alcohol. Smoking has also been identified as a risk factor. So those are definitely things that, you need to avoid to make sure you decrease your risk for colon cancer. But also things that you can do to help lower your risk is exercising, like exercising at least 30 minutes a day is very helpful, and then maintaining a healthy weight.
Boy, it seems like that is the case of just about every health condition known to man. All right, so how would we know? I think one of the reasons this testing's so important is because there really aren't symptoms. Am I off track there?
No, you're correct. Unfortunately, like folks who have colorectal cancer develop symptoms later on when, the risk of death and like lower chances of survival are vastly increased already. We want to catch these cancers early. We want to catch them where they're still local inside the colon or rectum when most people are not yet symptomatic. And that's why screening is so important.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. I'm Russell Mills. We're talking with Dr. Albert Mendoza of MedExpress Urgent Care. The subject today is colon cancer, colorectal cancer, and it is March, Colon Cancer Awareness Month in the U.S. So let's talk about the screening process. It's called a colonoscopy. I have had it done. I was absolutely unaware of what was going on at the time because they knock you the heck out, right? At least my doctor did.
Patients, when you get a colonoscopy, they give you a sedative. It should not be a painful procedure. If anything, you might develop a little bit of cramping, either towards the end of the procedure or after you get the procedure done. But it's usually pretty well tolerated. If you come out clean and you don't have any problems, you don't really need to get it done, but every 10 years. But if there are issues that are identified, you may have to do them a little bit sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I think they wanted me back after 5. I think they found a polyp, and they're like, well, we'll keep an eye on that. They also found some diverticulitis, which is fun. I mean, they're going to find other stuff possibly, too, while they're poking around looking for cancer. But at a certain age, I believe doctors like yourselves are very strident. This needs to be done. You need to get a colonoscopy. What age do you recommend, and is it different for men and women?
Good question. In the past, we used to recommend folks who do not have any familial risk factors for colon cancer to get it above 50. But the American Cancer Society has actually decreased the age of that recommendation, and it's now at the age of 45, and that's for both men and women. Obviously, if you have a very strong family history of colon cancer, or you do actually have other underlying gastrointestinal issues like Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, for example, the age for screening goes up, a lot sooner than that. But yes, for most people now, it's at the age of 45.
Okay, men and women.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so MedExpress, do they do colonoscopies?
No, sir. We do not. MedExpress is an urgent care, and we deal with everyday illnesses and injuries. But it is also very important for us not to just deal with your acute injuries, but provide education and awareness for screening and improving your overall health and wellness. And that's why we appreciate opportunities like this to be able to talk to the public about it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you spending the time to kind of educate us on some of this. March is Colon Cancer Month, right? Which is not a celebration, but rather an awareness raising sort of event to get people, the information they need. And again, considered the most preventable form of cancer. If you are diagnosed with it early, you have an excellent, excellent chance of survival and remission. And you said the age is now 45, everybody 45 and older. And after that, if all's good and no history, you can probably wait 10 years to get another one. Otherwise, they'll let you know if you need to come in sooner. But it is something that needs to happen for everybody, if at all possible. Fair?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Dr. Albert Mendoza with MedExpress. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.